Well, my name is Jen. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm going to give my testimony tonight. For some of you, this is a first. For others, you've heard this before, but I changed some of it, so you won't get bored. So here I go. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I struggle with relationship addiction, codependency, and same-sex attraction. In short, I have a tendency to depend on people more than I depend on God. In 1997, the Lord told me very clearly one day, I am jealous. And of course, in my pride, I was sure he was about ready to enlighten me with some divine gossip about somebody else. What he said, though, convicted me. He said, I am jealous because you have given pieces of your heart to people that belong to me. Now, me being so spiritually insightful, having grown up in church all of my life, having gone to Christian school 3rd through 9th grade, having already been on a short-term mission trip and taken 1 year of theology in college, I realized I had no idea what God was talking about. Nope. But God is faithful, even in spite of me. And he's been showing me what he meant by that over the past 15 years. You see, I grew up in a large family. I'm the youngest of 7 kids. And while growing up in a large family was pretty fun when I was really young, it has not been void of its hurts and traumas. The first distinct trauma I remember was when I was about 4 years old. One day, my mom was getting ready to go to the grocery store, and I wanted to join her. I begged and I pleaded, but she didn't want me to go with her. She insisted that I needed to stay home. Well, I was very upset, and I was crying and whining as she left the house. I went upstairs to my bedroom as I was pulling myself up to the window, sobbing and waving goodbye as I watched the car disappear over the knoll. It was then that my sister was fed up with my sobbing and whining and slammed the window down on both of my hands. My fingers were crushed under the weight of the old farmhouse window, and my sister couldn't get it opened. I was screaming from pain. It was years later that I was told that my dad heard me screaming, ran upstairs, and saw my hands pinned over to the window, and he opened it. But all I remember was feeling the extreme pain. It took away from me a few messages as a result of that experience. Those messages burned deep into me and formed my perspective of myself and the world around me. Those messages were, I'm not loved, I'm not good enough, and I deserve to be rejected and abandoned, to the point of feeling real physical pain. These messages were reinforced over other traumatic experiences in my childhood. My parents made light of the whole experience, and I don't ever remember them once having asked me how that had affected me. My dad always said that my fingers were all mutilated, and since he was a Christian Scientist back then, he didn't believe in taking me to the hospital. Instead, he just rocked me in the chair and he held my hands until I was so exhausted from crying that I ended up falling asleep. About an hour later, he had the courage to open his hands and look at my fingers. Well, he said it had been a miracle because all my fingers were straight again. My parents would say, oh yes, we believe in miracles. Jennifer's fingers were all broken and God healed them. Yes, my fingers were broken, but so had my perceptions and my understanding of who I was. I had felt so much pain that day that I'd actually passed out before my dad came into the room. Next thing I knew, we were in the chair. So in my little mind, I equated crying equals pain. I also concluded that my wanting my mom and wanting to be nurtured must be a bad thing because my sister punished me for wanting to be with my mom that day. I felt like I didn't deserve to be cared for and safe because I definitely did not feel cared for and safe that day. Other things happened over the years to reinforce these beliefs. My sister routinely bullied me, and despite me telling on her to my parents, they didn't really do much to address it either. She would pin me down on the floor and laugh while she physically tortured me until I cried in pain. I did not feel safe. My dad was an angry man. He was verbally and emotionally abusive all the time. And when he would get really angry, he would become physically abusive as well. Growing up in our house was like walking on eggshells. We never knew how angry Dad was going to be when he got home from work. And if my sister and I had been particularly naughty that day, after my mom had already spanked us a few times, she would say, "Just wait till your father gets home." We knew that would not be good. My mom was physically abusive as well, breaking paddles and wooden spoons routinely while she was spanking my sister and I. One day, she even came down to the school when I was in second grade because I'd gotten in trouble. She spanked me so hard that my entire classroom could hear me scream from out of the principal's office. I had a lot of fear growing up. Dad blamed us for anything and everything that went wrong. I became very performance-based to try to stay on his good side, but it didn't matter. I just couldn't seem to be good enough to avoid getting hit and yelled at. All this built up to an assumption that I started making about myself. If crying equaled pain, and Dad seemed to be the real power in the family, and anger was the way he communicated, then I needed to make some changes. Let's see, who usually cries? Well, girls do. Boys hardly ever cry, if at all. I never saw my brothers cry. My parents argued all the time, and it seemed that my dad always won and got his way. My dad's a man, my mom's a woman. Guys win, women lose. Not to mention that I was already a tomboy and loved playing sports, hunting, fishing, and anything well my brothers did I wanted to do. Put all that together, and I came up with the concept that God must have made a mistake. Yeah, I obviously should have been a boy, not a girl. In fact, I didn't want to be a girl at all. So I started acting like a boy, dressing like a boy, talking like a boy, spitting like a boy, whatever I could do to deceive people into thinking I was a boy. I didn't want to lose any longer. I didn't want to feel unsafe, nor did I ever want to cry again. Well, this is hard for me to pull off because I'm kind of a klutz, and, you know, I got injured a lot. So I would laugh instead of cry. Yeah, I would get angry when I felt vulnerable. In fact, I learned how to shut off my emotions altogether. I didn't feel good enough. I didn't feel accepted. So I decided I didn't need to feel at all, nor did I need anyone. I became closed off to people. I distanced myself from everyone, even my parents. And in order to deceive people into thinking I was a boy, I wouldn't let people get to know me either. I made up a new me, one that I got to decide who people saw. I became hard, calloused, tough, and isolated. I forgot who I was and became who I thought I needed to be to survive, to become accepted. And it worked for a while. The danger in all of my isolation is that it left me all alone and vulnerable to the enemy of my soul who preyed on me. I started hearing voices. They yelled at me so loudly, screaming condemnation onto me. They reinforced the messages that I was unlovable, that I wasn't good enough, and that nobody cared about me. They would come and torture me with despair. I became suicidal. I banged my head against the wall, hoping they would stop. I never told anybody about the voices, nor how depressed and suicidal I was. I masked it with wittiness and humor and distancing myself even more from people. Somehow, I made it through all those years and never really actually made any suicide attempts. Eventually, I couldn't fool people any longer into believing I was a boy. It was a real catastrophe for me because I'd spent years developing this persona, and it was very frustrating when I finally had to admit to myself that I couldn't pull it off any longer. Now, at this point, it was very good that I'd grown up in the country and I lived a pretty naive and sheltered life, for my desire to be a boy was very strong, and I had started becoming attracted to girls because, like, isn't that what boys do? I'm not sure what would have happened if I would have known that there was such a thing as a sex change operation. I really believe God protected me from knowing that was even possible. So here I was in high school, trying to change from thinking of myself as a boy to thinking of myself as a girl. For years I'd worked on this, you see. I was deceived. I had completely rejected my femininity, even to the point that when I had dreams about myself, I was male in the dreams. This deception created some problems. And even though I was changing how I thought about myself, I had already developed an attraction for girls. But all was not lost. I was still attracted to boys. In fact, I've come to realize that because of my lack of feeling nurtured by my mom, especially as a young child, and my response to pull away and become emotionally detached, it didn't really matter what gender a person was, if they expressed an interest in me. I grew up in emotional isolation. I wouldn't let people hug me or even barely touch me. Like I said, I wouldn't let people get to know me, and since I was living a lie, mostly with respect to my identity, I didn't really have any friends. Oh, sure. I was friendly towards people because I wanted to control them. I became very performance-based because I wanted people to like me and accept me, but they could not know me. Oh, no, that was not allowed. This became very problematic for me when I got to college and moved into a house of 38 other girls. Yeah, stupid. I think this was another one of those divine moments of grace when God took care to orchestrate moving me into a better place because I was just too weak in my understanding of relationships to make good choices. God surrounded me with a bunch of godly women in this house, and I noticed something about them. They were sharing things about themselves, like personal things. It was weird, but I kind of liked it. I had people trusting me and taking an interest in me. Well, I didn't quite know what to do with all that. In high school, I made, like, finally four friends at my church youth group, but it had just been an introduction into relationships. I was pretty much a relational retard. Yep, I really didn't know how to do friendships, and I certainly didn't know how to live with people in a healthy way. In fact, I had become so hard and callous using sarcasm as a way to control and manipulate that in the first 2 weeks of moving down to college, the house president had to pull me aside and clue me in that some of the gals were very upset with me. Yeah, and they were going to try to get me kicked out of the house. Remember, I'm a relational retard. I was completely clueless and had no idea that they were even mad at me. But I liked this house, and I wanted to stay, so I quickly made a few adjustments. All I knew to do was to perform better. So I went about trying to be whoever I thought they wanted me to be. I became goody Christian girl, and I tried to figure out this whole nice thing. But again, it was a lot of lies because I didn't really feel good enough. So how could I act good? My social skills were completely lacking, and I was a major control freak. It took only 3.5 months for catastrophe to strike. I became friends with one of the girls at the house. At the beginning of winter term, I told them my car hitting a patch of black ice on our way to Sutton River for a weekend. Distraught over my car, I ended up drinking the whole weekend. One night, in a drunken stupor, I ended up saying a bunch of stuff to this friend of mine. Well, when we got back, she confronted me. She was trying to be nice and show me that she cared about our friendship, and that was why she was confronting me, but what she ended up saying just floored me. After a very uncomfortable period of her apologizing and trying to soften how this was going to come across, she finally said, "I think you struggle with homosexuality, and I think you're attracted to me." She flinched. I freaked. You see, I grew up in a very legalistic, fundamental church. It was made very clear to me through the example of our music pastor, who admitted that he was gay after years of being into that church, that it was just not okay to be gay. This sin was unforgivable. He was kicked out of the family and kicked out of the church. People treated him with disgust and contempt. Like I said, I grew up in church, and I believed in God, and I couldn't be one of those people. They all went to hell, according to that church. So when my friend labeled me as a homosexual, I was horrified. Yet, there was something about that term that struck me as true, nonetheless. Since I had gone most of my life living a lie, I had become a very good liar. I convinced that friend that she was just flat out wrong. She'd read me wrong. I'd been drunk for crying out loud. And she misunderstood, blah, blah, blah. She profusely apologized and felt really bad. I let her feel really bad and then avoided her the rest of the year as much as possible. I spent the next 5 years trying to develop friendships only to have them become unhealthy and very dysfunctional. I honed my skills of lying, manipulation, and control to try to get what I thought I wanted. I did this all in an effort to try to fill the huge holes that had been created inside of me since I was a kid. I was starved for attention, starved for affection, starved to feel important to someone, I began to give pieces of my heart to people that belonged to God. I became very conflicted because I did take going to church really seriously. Yet, I craved the praise of people, and I sought it at any cost. I could not yet admit that I was powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and that my life was completely unmanageable. And that's what Principle 1 tells us. I ended up living with a woman and having a same-sex relationship with her, all the while being involved in a church and serving on their worship team. But I did know better. Throughout the whole year, I would routinely go and confess what I was doing to a trusted friend. She tried to point me to Christ and to freedom, but I kept choosing to feed my cravings instead. Finally, I was so miserable that I told my partner she had to move out, and then I cut off the relationship. Thus began my road to healing. I confessed to the pastor of that church that I was serving at, and even though that didn't go over so well, he did tell me about a ministry specifically for people who struggle with same-sex attraction. I started attending and went to their two-year program. Feeling pretty confident, I entered into a relationship with a man, and I got married to someone who I thought was nothing like my dad. But even though I'd become aware of some big problems that led me to same-sex attraction, I was completely unaware that my issues were not entirely gender-based. I ended up marrying an alcoholic and drug addict and soon fell into codependency in that relationship. He ended up being just like my dad when he drank and especially after he started doing meth. We were married for only about 1 year when I came to realize that I ended up marrying an alcoholic. By the third year of our marriage, he had started using meth. Our marriage plummeted into an ever-increasing spiral downward as my issues of relationship abandonment and brokenness were brought to the surface. Abuse from my childhood resurfaced as I encountered abuse in my marriage. Those voices I'd heard as a kid were now things that my husband was saying to me out loud. I quickly became a full-fledged codependent, trying all kinds of ways to coerce and nag and control and guilt my husband into stopping his addictions. There were several other issues going on in his personal life that were really beginning to affect me. I became emotionally detached, especially after learning that he was having an affair. And his increased violence towards me culminated in physical and sexual abuse as well. I was numb in the inside and minimized how awful things really were. I'd grown up being tough, and I continued that tough mentality for the next several years. Then one day, my husband was in a meth rage, and he pinned me down and he started choking me. I grabbed around his neck as well and said, "If you squeeze, I squeeze." I repeatedly told him to let go and get off of me until he did, and then I fled the house. I ended up doing an intervention on him, and he went into treatment. That was the real beginning of my recovery work as well. I learned about Al-Anon, and I started going to their meetings. I learned many concepts that were completely new to me because I slowly began to realize that although my parents never really drank or did drugs, I grew up in a dry, drunk family. There are addictions in some of my siblings that also fed into my upbringing. I had been raised to be a codependent by my mom. My dad and my addicted husband shared so many similarities that it astonished me as I started to admit them. I needed recovery, and I was like a sponge taking it all in. I had no idea how codependent I really was until I read this book that was all about codependency, and I listened to people share in the meetings. After 2 years, my husband told me about Celebrate Recovery, and we started coming here. He made it to 6 meetings. I've been here for 7 years. I appreciate how my Christianity and my recovery have found a common ground here at Celebrate Recovery. I joined a step study and I focused on my parents and my childhood and my first inventory. A while later, I heard a talk about abuse during one of our CR meetings. The lady had some charts, and as she talked, I was looking at one of the charts. And I was sickened at how every single kind of abuse had been present in my marriage. By this time, I had separated and we were getting a divorce, because my husband refused to turn his life and his will over to Christ's care and control, as Principle 3 states. His addictions and abuse had become more than I could handle, and he started up the affair again. I was losing myself to negativity and criticism in an ever-diminishing marriage. I started to allow myself not to be numb any longer, and spent several years working on healing from not only an abusive marriage, but also a traumatic and abusive childhood. My second step study allowed me a chance to work on a long inventory to process all the deep emotions caused by such deep wounds. I experienced a lot of healing in the rooms here at Celebrate Recovery. I have put work into my recovery to weed through the incredible mess of hurt that's mainly stemming from a root of feeling rejected and abandoned emotionally and relationally as a child, then identifying and admitting all the terrible, unhealthy habits I formed in reaction to being rejected and abandoned, and lastly, trying to recognize the hang-ups that keep tripping me up when layer after layer become exposed. And what is amazing is that God, he never wastes a hurt. He allowed me the opportunity to come alongside many of you as you've walked your process and your journey out in your own lives. I've seen and experienced what 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4 says, that God is the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we may comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort that we ourselves have received from God. How could I comfort you if I myself had not gone through such things and been able to receive God's comfort and compassion? No, my friend, God never wastes a hurt. He is in the business of restoring and redeeming that which was broken and lost. That is why I keep coming back week after week, because I have found hope and healing in Celebrate Recovery, and I want to share that with you all so that together we can move forward from what has kept us in bondage. I was held in bondage to my identity for many years, and the enemy tried to destroy me by making me question who I was. But what the enemy meant for evil, God changed for good. He has worked all things for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose, Romans 8:28. I used to be so full of shame over my past life and being in lesbian relationships, but God has shown me that this is merely what I have done. It is not who I am. Who I am is a daughter of the King. It took me years to say I was a daughter. I belong to the Lord, whether I live or die. That's Romans 14:8. I have been cleansed from my past sins. That's 2 Peter 1:9. Even my guilty conscience has been cleansed. That's Hebrews 10:22. And I've been set free by the truth, as John 8:32 says. As I walk this road of recovery, I learn to surrender to the Lord and depend on him. I am learning to find my identity in Christ instead of my fake way of being who I think people want me to be. I'm learning to find my security and value in Christ and trusting him with my deep wounds that are so painful but need healing. Healing that comes from working recovery program here at Celebrate Recovery and going to counseling over the years. If I didn't come each week and give back what, then I would no longer be a witness in the testimony of what only Christ's power was able to do in my life. I thought I had all kinds of really good ideas. I thought I knew what was best for my life. I thought pleasing people was a way to build relationships. I thought many things that have proven to be false and shallow thinking and have led me astray. In recovery, I found clarity and security because my recovery is built on Christ and who he is, not what I have done. And I am learning patience because God has been so very patient with me, even though I thought many times I was beyond his reach. I've had to learn to be patient with myself, which allows me to be patient with others. And I've learned how to respond instead of react when my triggers are being punched by other people and things are irritating me. I learned that serenity was something that I didn't possess before. Now I can take a deep breath, I can pause, I can quiet my mind, and I can keep my composure instead of reacting in all kinds of unhealthy behavior. But I also know myself, and if I don't stay accountable and have relationships in my life with people who are honest with me, and I can be honest with them, then I can quickly revert back to my old stinking thinking. I have found recovery that works, so I keep on working it. Thanks to all of you who have been patient with me, and I look forward to meeting those who are just getting started on their journey. I urge all of you to keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep your eyes on Jesus. Sometimes things get better before they get worse. Don't give up before the miracle happens. Thanks.